Hazel Khan, bringing you tidings from Free Speech Radio News, a half-hour national and international program that you can hear on WPKN every weekday evening at 7 p.m. WPKN has been carrying FSRN since the year 2000, when they were founded by striking freelance reporters protesting censorship at the Pacifica Network. Curious to know more about the people behind the news, I asked Catherine Comp, producer, and Dorian Marina, anchor, if they would tell us more about their work and their worker-run collective organization.
We are a telecommute office, and we all work from different cities. As you said, Dorian is in Los Angeles. I'm in Richmond, Virginia. We have a DC correspondent working from the Capitol in Washington. We have two headlines editors. One is in Tampa, Florida. The other is in Eugene, Oregon. And then we also have two technical producers, and they actually get to work together in a physical space. They work out of KPFA in the Bay Area. Our administrator is in Toledo, Oregon, and then we have another Bay Area staff member who works on bookkeeping. In the past, we've had staff working from Oaxaca, Mexico, New Delhi, India, and we've South Africa. So we've been a virtual international office throughout the year. And we basically use the telephone, chat, and email to communicate. At some point, we might get into video meetings, but we haven't done that yet. So we really rely on having clear communication through this virtual environment, since we don't get together in the same room ever, really.
Ever. You never see each other at all?
We don't. We've always wanted to do an annual retreat, but that's expensive. We would have to hire staff to produce the newscast while we are doing this retreat, and then fly everybody to one location. And because we live hand to mouth, we've never really had the funds to do that, although it is on our wish list.
What would you gain if you did have more face-to-face contact?
Well, I think, this is Dorian, I think that you bring up one of the challenges of this kind of environment, which is, you know, that the newsroom day-to-day kind of in-person contact and energy that's generated in a more traditional newsroom. However, I think what makes FSRN unique in this way is that, you know, the way we generate ideas and the way we discuss our editorial content happens a lot from story ideas, tips, sources that are generated from the community at the community level. And having the editorial team and reporters in these communities all over the country and all over the world, really, makes for a very rich discussion about what's going on in the community, who people have been talking with, what issues are important to them. Those things really come into the editorial discussion, so we ensure that we're not just focused on one issue or one geographic location.
So in a sense, the reporters and the staff are basically in the same sphere, if you like. I mean, you're all virtual to each other.
We are. And again, it would be wonderful to meet people in person, but I do think you can establish close relationships with people through the technology that we have at our disposal now. And I've gotten to know my coworkers very well throughout the years and have befriended a number of our reporters too. So despite its limitations, I think it does increase communication and access on some of those levels that Dorian was just talking about.
We had originally talked maybe of doing this interview on Skype. Are you using Skype to see each other?
Yeah, we've discussed doing more video calls, video interactions, and we do use Skype for some communication and for doing interviews and especially reaching sources in countries where traditional phone lines or even mobile phone technology is less reliable. But as far as the way that FSRN operates, we don't use it all that much as of now.
Now I'm getting a much better picture, as it were, of the organization. I mean, do you have editorial meetings every day?
We do. We have an editorial meeting every morning. It usually lasts about an hour. Sometimes it's 90 minutes, though. And that would include, for example, what Alice, our DC correspondent, thinks she should cover from the nation's capital. I'll bring the reporters' stories that I have planned for the day. The headlines editors will bring reporter pitches for headlines and also a really long list of other big news items that are happening around the world. Dorian will bring ideas for his daily interview, and then we'll discuss all of these stories. Sometimes we're discussing dozens of stories that we could cover on any one day, and we have to narrow that down to about 5 or 6 headlines and about 4 different feature stories. Our reporters send us story pitches every day. Some of those are quick turnaround stories about breaking news that we have to discuss immediately. Some of them are more evergreen, and we all contribute to feedback to those pitches and then decide to either commission them, to turn them down if they're not quite right for us, or to maybe make some changes and adjustments to that pitch and help the reporter form their story idea.
I was going to ask you, Dorian, how does it get to the script or whatever that you're reading from or you're doing for the broadcast itself?
Because I think partly because we have this highly decentralized structure and format, we do have a pretty highly organized schedule for the day. As Catherine mentioned, we have a very we have the same time we meet in the morning for editorial morning. And then we have we go off, as she described. We do our reporting, but we're constantly checking in throughout the day. And then we have a designated time for a midday check-in. We have designated times for deadlines of, as you're mentioning, putting the script together for the show, which comes together throughout the day. And there are specific times when we check in about certain things, and it goes through revision process, fact-checking. Checking back in with sources, et cetera. And then, importantly, it goes to a technical production team at a certain point, and they are the ones who pull together the audio and put it together for production.
I would definitely say that over the past few years, we've really polished our game, and we do it a lot better with the deadline pressure and getting a very solid package together at that 4 p.m. deadline. And it is, I would say, 99% of the time pretty flawless. So glad you think that too.
And I encourage our listeners to go and just look at the website, thefsrn.org. It's really it's a beautifully organized website. What time do you post that day's?
Yes, we post our headlines as a separate 5-minute packet. We post each individual feature segment, and then we post the entire 30-minute news program. And people can subscribe to our podcast through the website, through iTunes, and we also post to SoundCloud. So that's another distribution method for FSRN.
But that's a good segue, actually, to the reporters, because the reporters then also can get all the information they need from the website, the information they need to become a reporter for FSRN, if you could talk about that.
Sure, exactly. Yeah, there is a lot of resources on our website for people who would like to become contributors. We work with reporters all over the globe with all different skill sets and levels of experience in journalism. We just require that you have a broadcast quality recorder, and nowadays you can get those for about $150, $200 and a little bit of reporting experience. But we work with reporters and help them gain radio journalism skills. And if it's a newer reporter, we just might work with them a little bit more slowly on a story that could run on any given day in a certain month, and then have them work up to more breaking news stories. And it's, I think, a real benefit for FSRN, because a lot of the newer reporters that we work with, they grow and develop and become very strong, and then they go on to get full-time jobs at other news organizations. So I always like to refer to FSRN as sort of a graduate school in journalism that doesn't cost much money and you actually get paid for, because we do train and provide this educational component for reporters.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think that's it's part of our mission, and one of the things we're proud of is being open and encouraging new voices and people who are interested in community journalism and grassroots reporting to be a part of this project and to come on and to learn more skills, technical skills, and also reporting skills, you know, how to access public information and, you know, how to understand better how democracy works on a local level and a global level, and to add those voices to the mix and to get those other perspectives into this media landscape, which is, you know, increasingly becoming more and more narrow as far as where the stories are coming from.
How many reporters do you think you have in your database? Or I don't know how to ask the question.
We have about 400 reporters in our database. They're not all contributing right now. A lot of them have, you know, full-time jobs and families and are too busy and have moved on. But I would say, like, any given year, we probably have, I would say, 70 to 100 different reporters contributing. Mm-hmm. It is exciting because each year we do have new reporters, new voices, new areas of coverage. I do wish FSRN could do a little bit more recruitment, more active recruitment of new reporters. It's something that we don't have a lot of time to do, so it kind of gets pushed to the bottom of the to-do list. But it's exciting when we have new people come on board and they start to bring us new voices from another corner of the world. One example of that is a reporter who came on last year, Madonna Virola from the Philippines. And we've had some wonderful on-the-ground grassroots reporting from her about mining, the environment, the extreme weather and the floods that have been happening recently, reproductive rights. And it's wonderful to have those additional voices on our newscast and bringing them to a largely U.S. listener base who probably are not going to hear those voices anywhere else.
And Catherine said, you wish you could go out and find some of these people, but really they find you too, don't they? I mean, there must be word of mouth that goes on, or, I mean, how do people find you?
It is a lot of word of mouth. Reporters that have worked with us in the past often recommend new contributors. I think sometimes people find us through journalism sites. We occasionally post ads on public notice boards like Craigslist looking for new reporters. So we don't pay a lot. We all wish we could pay our reporters more. But I think what reporters really appreciate is the collaborative editorial environment that we have and the fact that they can bring issues that are really important to them and their communities to us. And you know, most of the time these stories get produced and get aired, or we work with the reporter in order to make the story something that would be appropriate for FSRN. So there's a little bit of us reaching out to reporters when we have a story idea that we would like them to cover, and then a lot of our coverage is really guided and directed by the reporters themselves and what they're seeing on the ground in their environments. Mm-hmm. One example of that I can give is our longtime reporter in the Gaza Strip, Rami El-Magari. Mm-hmm. And a while ago, there was, because of the blockade, a lack of resources in the Gaza Strip. So, you know, everything from electricity to electronics parts. But he pitched us this story about a lack of chickens. And, you know, on its surface, you know, it didn't really seem like that exciting of a story. But Rami explained to us that chicken is a really important part of the Palestinian diet in the Gaza Strip. And because there was this lack of chickens, it had driven up the price and people couldn't afford them anymore. So that was a story that none of us probably would have come up with. And if there was a Western reporter who had been walking through the Gaza Strip during that day or that week, they might not have noticed how significant that the lack of chickens and poultry in the markets was.
So in that context, what is the international versus national distribution, I mean, of reporters, and also I was wondering how that relates to how you decide on in your meetings, your daily editorial meetings, how much of a newscast is going to be international as opposed to national?
We basically just try to balance it between U.S. domestic and international news. On some days, we may have all international stories. On others, all U.S. It kind of depends on the news cycle and what stories are coming in. But on an ideal day, we would have a balance between the two. A lot of the compliments we get from people are because of our international coverage. And, you know, as we said before, a lot of these stories aren't being covered by other news outlets in the U.S. And because we prioritize the voices of ordinary citizens and residents and what their concerns are and what they're doing to make their communities a better place, I think these stories really resonate with our U.S. audience. They want to hear what regular everyday people are doing.
But sometimes you don't know what the stories are till they come into you, right? I mean, you don't always know yourself. I mean, you can't possibly know all the stories that are going on.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, and that's where it comes in. I think the network of reporters and contributors we have, we really do depend on them to let us know, you know, what's going on in their community, what's going on in the country they're in, the city, because as we've described, you know, we're a very small staff. We come together and we discuss the news of the day, but of course we're not able to know what's going on in every community. And, you know, we have 30 minutes. It's a fairly short program. And there are tons of very important stories going on all over the world. So I would say a lot of our content does come from that, from reporters say, hey, you know, have you heard this is going on in the St. Petersburg, Russia, or this is going on in Manila, or this is going on in the West Bank, or, you know, Lagos, Nigeria, and we haven't heard of it, or we haven't heard the angle that they're bringing or the voices that they're proposing.
Catherine Comp and Dorian Marina of Free Speech Radio News are talking to Tidings on WPKN about their work and their organization. I'm now going to ask this question particularly about Israel-Palestine, about the West Bank or Gaza. Do you get pressure ever from any groups in the U.S. trying to get you to suppress certain kinds of reporting from that area?
I have not gotten any pressure. I've been producer for 4 years. I'm not sure about anything that's come before that. About, I want to say a year and a half ago, we had a listener write in and said, your coverage of the Middle East is very focused on the West Bank and Gaza, and there are a lot of anti-war peace activists in Israel working for good causes, and I really think that you should increase your coverage there. And so that was one of the cases where we were like, yeah, you know, you're right. We don't have a reporter there right now, and we should really be getting these voices out. So we put up an ad on Craigslist in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and we found Jillian Kessler-Damore, who filed a story for us this past Monday, and we'll have another segment later this week or next week. So, but we haven't had anybody pressure us to change our coverage.
Interesting. Can you give me some idea of how much FSRN has maybe changed in the last year or in the last 5 years, whatever framework you'd like to include?
FSRN has been around since 1999, so over a decade for this worker-run daily U.S. and international news show, and I think that's a pretty big accomplishment. FSRN was founded by reporters who went on strike from the Pacifica News Network. And in the beginning, they didn't have a whole lot of resources, but they did what they could. They volunteered a lot of their time, and eventually it expanded into more of a solid show with a number of regular contributing reporters. FSRN used to do a lot more training around the world. One of the former producers, Aaron Glantz, used to travel to different countries and train reporters in person, which I think was really valuable. And some of those reporters still contribute today. I would say over the last 5 years or so, FSRN has become a little bit more polished. I think everyone has gotten better at what they do here and how this works. After 10 years, it's there's a system that's in place, and we work much better in this remote telecommute environment. And the last few years, I think it's become even better. It has a very good sound. The editorial quality is quite high. And I think it's a product that a lot more people would enjoy if we could get it into their hands. One area that we've never really had the resources to properly invest in is outreach. So while we're on 114 stations right now, it is mostly U.S. stations. I think there's a lot of international stations that would be interested in airing us. And I'm hoping that at some point we can also expand our online audience. So many people are using mobile devices and the web rather than listening to terrestrial radio stations. So I think there's a lot of people out there that would really be interested in our content. We just need to find the resources and a little bit of time to try to get it into their hands and their eyes and their ears. We are working on a campaign right now to increase our carriage. So we have a list of stations that aren't currently airing us, and we're reaching out to them, and we're going to make the case for them to start airing FSRN. Mm-hmm. I think one of the challenges that we face with getting new stations is the fact that we're a 30-minute show, 29 minutes to be exact. So stations need another 29-minute show to complement that and to fill out the hour. I think if we were an hour long, it would be a lot easier for stations to add us to their program grid. But becoming an hour-long show would essentially mean doubling our budget and having a much bigger staff. And we're always kind of just scraping by. So I'm not sure if that could happen anytime soon.
And you're tied to some extent to Pacifica's fortunes, right? Pacifica is a major funding source for you.
Pacifica has always been a major funder of FSRN. And right now they pay for about 70% of our total budget. We get about 15% from stations, another 15% from listeners. FSRN costs about $1,200 a day to make, which is actually quite a deal. We do a lot with a little amount of money. If you listen to other news programs, at the end when they list their credits, there's often 20 names at the end. And we have just 4 editorial staff each day and 2 part-time technical staff. So we're doing a lot with a little bit of money. And we are hoping that we can diversify our revenue stream in the coming years so that we can be less reliant on one foundation.
You mentioned also that you think you'd like to get stations to carry you, international stations to be carrying you. Is that part of the plan for the future? I have an understanding of the international-national breakdown. I don't understand which countries really the reporters are in, because I imagine that there's going to be a relationship between the distribution of where the reporters are internationally and maybe where the stations could come from. Because to some extent, those are sort of ambassadors, you know, for FSRN in their countries, in the sense that they're reporting out to you, but some of them would be very happy to have FSRN on their local radio stations or their national radio stations. That's all I was thinking before, is if there could be somehow, you know, a relationship going that way.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Hazel. I'm going to have to take that back to our steering committee.
Because you've got a presence there, and it's a one-way presence. So maybe it could be a two-way presence somehow, I don't know. But anyway, you know, this has been incredibly interesting, and I'm sure our listeners will be really interested to hear, to have FSRN come to life like this.
We are a worker-run collective, so each of us also contributes to the running of the organization, too.
I see. So that's another dimension, is this workers' cooperative kind of dimension.
Yeah. Yeah, because in addition to your role as a producer, reporter, anchor, whatever it may be, you also have roles to contribute to make the organization run, and it's part of having this horizontal structure where people participate in the decision-making process. You know, what direction will we go in as an organization? That's part of the responsibility of being part of FSRN. in addition to the day-to-day work to make sure the newscast gets on the air.
So that's, you know, the question I had at the beginning, which I guess we're answering now at the end, is what is the model that you are? You know, if somebody wanted to replicate FSRN, what is the model? So it's partly the telecommuting thing, but it's also this workers' cooperative and your own news organization. So I don't know if there's a word for all of that, but that's what I was trying to understand. And I mean, I understand it now because I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you are unique in this, right? I mean, do you think you are?
I don't know of any daily radio shows in the U.S. that are worker-run like we are. There have been other worker-run news organizations. So the worker-run model does exist in other business environments. Not so sure about how often it exists in news in general in the U.S. And this non-hierarchical structure is, I think, important because it's empowering. It empowers each of us to bring something substantial to this organization and, as Dorian said, have a role in decision-making. It often makes the decision-making process a lot longer than if you just had one person making the decisions. But in the end, you have a group of people who are ideally all invested in the outcome and have all contributed to that outcome. So I think there's really real positive benefits to a non-hierarchical structure. So we use consensus-based decision-making, and we have a steering committee that is made up of staff and then FSRN members. To become an FSRN member, you need to contribute a certain number of stories, a certain number of volunteer hours, be a board member, or be a staff member. We have elections once a year. Our elections are coming up this fall, and we will be seeking a few board members for open seats and steering committee members, too. I will also mention to the WPKN audience, in case anyone's interested, that anyone can run for our board of directors. Then our steering committee is tasked with the management. Our staff takes care of day-to-day and editorial, and then our board has fiduciary responsibility for the organization. Dorian, do you have anything to add about our structure and how it works?
No, that pretty much covers it, and I would just add, like many organizations, we have regular meetings, you know, staff meetings and committee meetings where we meet to discuss the organization and various issues in running it.
But these are virtual meetings. You don't meet in the same room.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I think this is really, really interesting. I mean, that's the other side of FSRN is the organizational side, the group, you know, as opposed to the product, which is the news and the reporters and all that. There's this other thing that I find, it's obviously not as well known. It's not your face that you present to the world, but...
Yeah, it's definitely something that we're proud of.
Well, thank you very much indeed for spending this time with me.
That was Catherine Comp and Dorian Marina of Free Speech Radio News talking to Tidings about their work and their organization. Tidings is heard on the second Wednesday of every month at 7:30 p.m., right after FSRN on WPKN 89.5 FM, streaming and archived on WPKN.org and available on hazelkahn.com. Tidings is produced by Tony Ernst.